Good evening, everyone. Welcome to tonight's meeting. It's my pleasure to welcome everyone to the meeting on Monday the 3rd of February 2024 and welcome to those members of the community who are in the public gallery this evening, as long as those people who are watching along at home on YouTube. Being 5:30pm, I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Yes.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, our Manager of Finance, Mr Jones, our Communications Lead, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We don't have any apologies this evening. Takes us to the first page of the agenda, and the motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 1, held on the 20th of January 2025, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Still on page 1, workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop in relation to Kingston Park last Monday, which was the 28th of January 2025. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No, thank you. And still on page 2, transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'd like to move that the motion on page 88, which was an application for a permit for a sauna, that it be taken in open session.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder for that motion? Seconded by the Deputy Mayor. I'll put that that recommendation that the report in closed session, which is item number... Let me just get the right... Item number 21.1 on the agenda be moved from closed into open session. All those in...
Sorry, Mayor. Can I just ask a procedural question?
Yes.
There are obviously reasons why items are put in the closed agenda, I guess, determined on the Act. Are we able to get some advice or something that we actually can?
Sure, yeah. Beg your
pardon. And would that be coming tonight or at the next meeting?
No, we'll do that now. Mr Smee can assist us with that.
Through you, Mayor, the meeting regulations indicate certain circumstances under which items may be placed on the closed agenda. There were in part commercial reasons for including the item in closed. That said, there is no opposition from a staff perspective to transferring the item into open session, and in fact we did check with the applicant and there is no issue from the applicant's perspective either. So all clear if councillors wish to move it to open.
Councillor Dean.
So then it would go to the next meeting?
No, it'll come tonight.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yep. Any further discussion? If not, I will put the recommendation moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to questions without notice from the public.
Ma'am,
does any...
Before you proceed,
yes.
Apologies, I missed a declaration of interest. I'm wondering if I might make that before you move on.
Yes.
Sorry, I missed making a declaration of interest, Mayor. I wonder if I might deal with that.
Sure, yes, please. Yep.
It's a declaration of interest in relation to the matter that was just raised. I have a conflict and I will be leaving the room.
Okay, thank you. So on item... which was item 21.1, which we will deal with. Miles will deal with it as the first officer's report before the Leslie Vale Oval one. Thank you. We will note that, and Mrs. Morton will provide you with a form. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public have a question without notice? Thank you very much. If you could just come to the microphone and give your name and the suburb in which you live before you ask your question.
Mark Dunellan from Huntingfield.
Delays in roadworks are on the forefront of many people's minds at the moment, unfortunately, and I had a question from a colleague raised with me today about the construction on the intersection of Denison and... you probably know which other street it is.
Maranoa.
The questions, I'll just give you all three because they'll be best answered together.
Yep.
Were the roadworks scheduled to be finished last week before the end of school holidays? Could the works have been scheduled 2 weeks earlier to allow for more leeway, say, in a delay? And when are the works estimated to be completed?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. In answer to your first question, I guess we've tried to schedule these works so they fit within the school holiday period. It's quite difficult to actually manage that, obviously, with contractor availability as well at the same time. So we did organise for that to happen in the earliest possible time after Christmas. In terms of where we expected to actually get to, it's about where we actually got to. We knew we'd probably have an unsealed surface at the end of it by the time school actually started. The intention was it would be an open road, which is what it is. The idea in terms of where we will go to from here, there's two different parts to it. So there's the substantial sealing of the road, which will happen, I think it's about Thursday week. And then after that, in the next school holidays, to complete the work, they'll put a skid seal on it, which is one of the main reasons why we're actually doing the project in the first place. We have to actually allow for the hot mix seal to actually settle for a little while before we can put that final seal on top. So the intention behind it is to actually, as much as possible, minimise the inconvenience to everybody. Certainly appreciate the fact that it's a very busy area. Certainly appreciate the fact that it's very difficult when people are coming back to school, and certainly appreciate that we will try and, while they're doing some minor works, which they were doing today there, that we'll try as much as possible for contractors not to be there during the peak morning and afternoon periods in particular.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Mr. Dunellan.
And I might just ask again, could the works have been scheduled 2 weeks earlier to allow more time?
Thank
you, Mr. Reid.
No, that's what I tried to say at the beginning there, is to say that partly to do with trying to fix these projects within holiday periods there can be a little bit tricky because it's reliant on contractor availability as well at the same time. It's a reasonable holiday period at the Christmas break, but contractors aren't usually available until a little bit later. So we're talking about, you know, that sort of early to mid-Jan period, and that's pretty much where we've actually scheduled it in. And we pretty much got to where the point where she expected we'd get to as well at the same time.
A great detailed answer. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Dunellan. Any further questions? No, thank you very much. It takes us to questions on notice from the public. We had a number of questions. The first one in relation to planning department staffing levels from Mr. Knightley, with a response from Ms. Shakuti. The next one from Mr. Biggins, and a response from a number of our staff. And those questions related to governance, landscape conservation zone, trees on private land bylaw, and bushfire management. On page 6 then, we had a question from Leith McDougall in relation to bushfire management, with a response from a number of our staff. And lastly, on page 7, we had a question from Ms. Jo Landon with a response from Mr. Stander in relation to specific area plans. If anybody does wish to submit a question on notice, they can do so by completing the relevant form on our website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. And now we are on page 8, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question they wish to ask? Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My question relates to the Snug Tears fires, the ongoing situation there. I'd like to start by thanking sincerely all the people involved from the many agencies and, of course, council as well, members of the community as well, for who are helping out in this ongoing situation. At the meeting at the Margate Hall on Friday evening, a constituent raised with me the issue of fire trail access across both public land and council-owned land and also private land. So my question is, does council maintain a routine of clearing fire trails in the fire trail network, or is this a responsibility of other agencies?
I've got several people wanting to answer this. Ms. Shakuti is the lucky winner.
Through you, Mayor. It is the responsibility of other agencies, if they are the other agencies' tracks to their breaks. For council-maintained breaks, we maintain our tracks. So.
Great, thank you. And through you, Mayor, if I may, the question is, in terms of planning for new fire trails through areas of high fuel load which are on council-owned land, which, I guess, department of council is responsible for that? Is it our natural areas and biodiversity team, or would it fall elsewhere? Like, if we had a tracks and trails committee, is that something that they could get involved in terms of identifying tracks that are overgrown and need clearing, that kind of thing?
I imagine it would be our NAB team, but I'll ask Ms. Shakuti to confirm that.
Through you, Mayor, it is our NAB team, and in particular our bushfire officer, who works very closely with TFS, and he would liaise with other areas of the organisation as needed.
That's great, thank you. And through you, Mayor, in terms of, like, I guess, learnings, obviously this is an ongoing situation, and I reiterate my thanks to everybody for mucking in and getting involved in what is an ongoing situation. Thinking about the, you know, the next time, will there be the opportunity for us to reflect on the tracks, the fire trail network, and possibly open up opportunities for community members to participate in alerting council to fire trails that are overgrown? So would that be something that is helpful?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Potentially, I suppose what we probably need to reiterate is that fire management in the state is primarily the TFS's responsibility, along with Parks and Wildlife and Sustainable Timbers. We do sit on the Fire Management Council, and we align all of our strategies with what they call a tenure-blind approach across the state, so which is determined by those three agencies. So that strategy is informed by lots of different data points, and it's best that we align ourselves with that strategy that's provided by the TFS.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Thank you, Mayor. I did have two questions, but one has been asked by Mr. Donnellan from the gallery, so thank you, Mark. The only question I have is, could Council please update the community on the latest discussions around the AFL High Performance Centre and the progress we're making and where we're at?
Mr. Stewart, please.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. So, Council is in, I guess, discussions with the Department of State Growth, who are the agency that are leading the approach around the High Performance Centre. At the moment, we have provided a schedule of costs that Council will incur in the first 6 months through to the end of this financial year for Council in terms of the costs involved with the project. So, the State Government are preparing a grant deed that will fund council for that first period. Once we're in receipt of that, we'll be, funded on a monthly basis to deliver the areas of responsibility that we have for delivery of the community infrastructure, the planning, those types of things within the program. In parallel, we'll be looking to develop and finalise the Heads of Agreement, which will be a sort of overarching agreement that'll support and define Council's responsibilities alongside the responsibilities of the State Government throughout the entire project, and that'll sort of involve in the roles and responsibilities as well as funding obligations associated with that program. In parallel to all of those sort of negotiations, we've got conversations that are happening with the State Government around how we are developing a precinct planning approach up at the the sports centre precinct around making sure that we've got, you know, the right layout, the spatial layout is beginning to work. The state are looking at design options for the more detailed, granular design of exactly where the built facility of the High Performance Centre will sit. And so all those sort of pieces of design work are happening in parallel, and Council will be procuring both engineering and sort of architecture designs to help us with that overall precinct plan at the moment. So it gives you a bit of an idea of the pieces of the puzzle that are being pulled together at the moment.
Councillor Ntoli, any further questions?
Yes, one more, and that is, do we have an estimation of a construction date begin or a breaking of ground?
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. At this stage, I don't have a date for breaking of ground. There's a lot of project planning work still to happen. A number of other elements, such as subdivision, development applications, all of those types of things that will need to be worked through before we get to that point. The project planning will get to that sort of more detailed, granular approach eventually, but we're not there at yet. We're sort of more dealing with the macro blocks of time before we get to a break ground moment. And certainly breaking ground will be across many different elements. Obviously, there's the built facility of the High Performance Centre, but then there's also new ovals to be constructed, new club rooms, upgrades to other infrastructure as well. So that'll happen over a period of time.
That's all. Thanks, Mayor. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, I had Councillor Richardson and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Over the weekend, I was quite delighted to hear overwhelming praise for Council on their response to the bushfire emergency, I guess. The things that we put in place and the information that we put out there, residents were very appreciative of, and I had a number of people specifically mention to me how grateful they were to have the free green waste available at the tip. That allowed people to spend the weekend clearing their property, getting it ready, making themselves safe. So not so much a question as a statement, and I was specifically asked to pass on that. Thanks.
Thank you for that. I received some similar feedback, and certainly the attendance at the meeting was very strong. I think we estimated around 500 to 600 people were there, and they were, I think, all pleased to hear how significant the resources were that the TFS and the other agencies had been putting into the fire to ensure that it was as contained as possible. And we were also able to then, through our emergency management coordinator, make that announcement about the Green Waste Weekend, and also to just reiterate, you know, what is our role? Our role in this is secondary, but still very important in terms of communicating to the community and ensuring that when asked to by the TFS that we would stand up the evacuation centre, and certainly that's the point that our staff had been working towards. And I'm sure that like any emergency situation where we've had staff involved in the Huon Valley fires back in 2019, there'll be a learning from this as to how we can improve in the future as well. But I'm sure the staff really appreciate those comments being passed on. And I think we do have a figure of the amount of green waste that actually came through Beretta at the weekend, if Mr. Stewart would like to share that.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, there were 387 transactions that went through as part of that support of the community to ensure that their properties were bushfire ready, and that was 43.4 tonnes of green waste that was dropped off through that.
Yep. Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, Council maintains over 500 kilometres of roads in the municipality and about the same amount of sealed roads as unsealed roads. Over the last maybe 10 years, development on many of those unsealed roads has exceeded far and away what anybody would have expected some of those roads to carry. My question is whether or not, and understanding that the sealing of roads
is not a task without cost or proper considerations. Whether council has any assessment criteria that they consider when considering the upgrade of an unsealed road to a sealed road.
I believe we do, but Mr Reeve can assist us with that.
Through you, Mayor. I guess the easiest way to say that is we do have informally, so we certainly look at things like what the maintenance considerations are. In other words, if you've got a steep section of unsealed road, quite often that'll have some elevated maintenance if you have a lot of traffic using it as well at the same time, whether there's any accident history, what sort of abutting properties are there. So some of these properties, some of these roads we actually have almost become a little bit urban in nature, if you like, due to the density of the housing there, so obviously picks up more traffic as well. However, having said that, you're right, there's a lot of unsealed roads in the municipality which we're blessed with, which is maybe a little bit different to some other councils. So one of the tasks on the list of my department is to actually put before council a policy on unsealed roads there, which does just that, actually puts the criteria down against various different things and actually lists those roads that we actually have and actually suggests at what criteria we would actually consider doing sealing a road. Obviously, sealing a road, as you mentioned, there is an expensive proposition, so it has to be, you know, thought through fairly carefully. But I think it's actually important to have that visibility and transparency for everybody to actually look at, and something for councillors to actually hang their hat on as well when they get these questions from the community. So it's one of the ones that's planned before the end of this financial year. Now putting the pressure on my staff to deliver that, but that's the intention behind it, so that that information actually is just there for councillors to use.
Exactly what I wanted. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions. First one, just a note that I'll be asking a few questions in closed session.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is in regards to the waste strategy. Just wondering if we can have an update in regards to the new version of that, and also wondering about FOGO, whether we're looking at the opt-out approach.
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it was one that was raised last year through our budget process in terms of renewing our waste strategy. It's going back a little while now, so it's getting to the point now where most of the actions have either been done or are ongoing actions, and there's a few things that have actually happened in the state with obviously the statewide board and the regional board in place, and some things happening in that area as well across the state. So it is certainly on our list to actually put forward again in the budget submissions for next financial year to renew that waste management strategy, and in particular to, you know, pick up on some additional actions and to actually pick up on things that you've just mentioned there, for example, in terms of FOGO, as to whether or not we want to actually go down the track of actually, I guess, changing how we've actually got that set up, and probably to look at also where our collection services are as well at the same time. They're two of the big ones, I think, that should actually be considered for a waste management strategy. So, yep, absolutely, we'll come up through the budget process, and I guess that'll be up to everybody around this table here to make some decisions on whether we go forward with that next year.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I thought I recalled we did include it in the budget, but I'd have to, perhaps I was wrong in my memory of that, but that's okay. Probably can't remember everything.
Mr. Reeve is shaking his head.
The other question, I've had a few community members contact me, I guess, just concerned and I guess a bit of a wonder. For those who put in a submission during the exhibition period for the new planning scheme, what advice or information are we giving those people in regards to what the process looks like in regards to the hearing process? For people who've never been to anything like that previously, there's kind of some wonder about what that looks like, what they can say. Are we providing general information, or people just can contact staff if they have any questions?
Ms. Chaputi.
Through you, Mayor, that's a really good question. And I'm not sure what information we have specifically in relation to that on our website, but I will discuss with staff what the most appropriate pathway is for people who have made a submission to seek that advice, whether it's from council or the commission themselves.
Thank you.
And a question regarding the Aquatic Centre Working Group. Just wondering any updates in regards to that, please.
Mr. Smee can assist us with that one.
Through you, Mayor, the group met last in early December, I believe, and in essence, the next key step for the group is waiting the outcome of our grant application to the precincts program, where we've sought funding to do design work, and that outcome won't be known until probably later next month. So it was agreed that there wouldn't be a further meeting until we know the outcome of that application.
Thank you. Further questions? No, thank you very much. Takes us to page, still on page 8, questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors, and also there were no petitions still being actioned, and also at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We're now on officers' reports to council, and as foreshadowed with that move of the item out of closed session, we're jumping to page 89, which won't be in the public agenda because it was originally in closed session, but it is item number 21.1. It's Parks, Recreation and Natural Areas Bylaw number 3 of 2021, application for a permit, with a recommendation on page 92. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover and Councillor Dean.
Point of order is Councillor Street.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Councillor Street is leaving the room. Thank you. Sorry, I'll go backwards. I've got a mover in Councillor Dean and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, you've already highlighted, just before I go into it, I guess what I'm only really now discovering is seems to be a bit of a loophole in that we've got something in closed session where right now if someone's listening, they actually haven't got access to the report. So I'm going to obviously do my best to try and summarise it as best I can. But the other is that usually it would, you know, be released on a Wednesday or a Thursday, and the community can read it and have an opportunity, I guess, to engage with their local councillors and ask questions or whatever. So, rightly or wrongly, I'm not saying either way. It's just I'm just flagging it. There does seem to be a bit of a loophole in whether, because I know similar things have come before us in close, and we've just discussed them in close, and it's been fine. And I've got no issue with it if staff are to discuss it in open, but it does seem to be a bit of an anomaly.
I agree that that is a bit of a loophole, because we would normally have to, anything would have to be out in the public arena. We can always, if it is the desire of councillors, we could have a procedural motion to defer this, to have it on the next agenda so that it can go out into the community for them to be aware of it and provide any feedback to us. So that would need to be a procedural motion.
Can I then just ask a question before potentially that gets discussed of staff? They've obviously worked with the applicant. You know, it would mean 2 weeks of waiting and then it would be assessed in 2 weeks and nothing will happen that time. Is it, you know, would that be a reasonable procedural motion to delay this decision 2 weeks, or do you think it's something that we should really just action now?
Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mayor, I've not personally been in discussion with the applicant, but my view is that a 2 week delay is not going to be a game changer. And I understand where you're coming from, Councillor Dean, and I would have no objection to the matter being deferred.
Councillor Dean, did you want to respond to that, and then I'll go to Councillor Fox.
Oh, look, I've got no issue. I've moved it. I'm happy to support this, but if the will of the table is that we give the community an opportunity just to at least read the report, might not have anything to say, but if they do, they've got an opportunity to at least read it before it comes before us again, so I'd be supportive of that. Councillor Fox.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I guess the main reason I'm then asked to have it in open session was because I don't like the community getting surprises. So in that regard, I would prefer to defer the matter so that it can go on the public agenda, people can see, they can respond to us before we make a decision. So I move that the matter be deferred.
Okay, so I have a procedural motion that the matter be deferred. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Gladewright. So it's moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour that the matter be deferred? Against? Motion. Okay,
a show of hands is required, that all those in favour of the matter being deferred, please raise your hands. Is Councillors Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Gladewright and Reet, and those against, is Councillors Antoli and Cordova. The motion is carried, so the matter will be deferred to the meeting on in a fortnight's time. If you could please get Councillor Street back, you'll be very surprised that we're back already. We are now on page 9, land lease Leslie Vale Oval, with a recommendation on page 12. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Cordova, and a seconder, Councillor Dean. Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. The Council has received an approach from a related entity of Telstra to lease land at the Leslie Vale Oval Reserve for the purpose of installing a telecommunications tower. There's been submissions put forward to Council that raise issues around health, environmental impact, property values, and it's all in the report that you can see. The Council report acknowledges that the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency, as well as the World Health Organization, have concluded that there's no substantiated scientific evidence of health effects from low levels of electromagnetic energy that are emitted by this type of facility. So it will be a lease whereby a break date to be granted to the entity, whereby every 5 years the entity may elect to terminate the lease by giving council 3 months' notice. I've taken into consideration the various issues raised by those representatives who have opposed this, but I think on balance it's an important step to take in order to improve mobile and telecommunications in the local area, particularly around improving mobile and wireless broadband services in the local area. It will particularly help coverage and enhanced capacity for mobile users in both the Leslie Vale and Nika areas, as well as improved coverage on the Huon Highway between Kingston, Leslie Vale and Sandfly. Particularly, you know, I mean, it's not directly related, but the better telecommunications that we have, particularly in times of emergencies and just general communication, it's better to have improved communication. There's more people working from home, and there's also, you know, we live in an age where it's really important that we remain connected, not just for safety, but also just for amenity and community wellbeing, and so I support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further contributions? Councillor Antoli, and then Councillor Dean, and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with the way the motion was presented, and I do also support it, but I acknowledge also that there is concern out there from people that live near electromagnetic emitting towers and the like. It's a natural concern. They're ugly. It does create fear. The tower itself, though, is going to be hidden away in a pocket of the oval that's surrounded by trees, and there's no real... there aren't any houses that are that close to it, and we all know that electromagnetic radiation dilutes exponentially for every metre that you are away from it. So when you're 1 metre away, it's exponentially... it's when you're 20 metres away, it's exponentially less than when you're 19 metres away, and so forth. So I believe the concern is not based on science, I note that I was doing some research that apparently using a mobile phone next to your head is hugely more emitting of energy into your brain than being anywhere near a tower because of its height. And so I did some research and I wondered, well, what's happened with brain cancer, which is an awful subject, but it's connected to people's fear, and it wasn't actually mentioned in people's objections. And the brain cancer rate in Australia since 1982 is the same as it is today. It was 7.1 cases per 100,000 in 1982. It's 7.3 cases per 100,000 in 2019. So over the past 40 years, it hasn't changed. And we all know that mobile phone use has been massive. during that time, especially from the early 1990s. So there seems to be absolutely no correlation between mobile phone use, electromagnetic radiation from them, and brain cancer rates at all. The only discrepancy is that brain cancer rates in the elderly above 80 has increased dramatically through the ability to detect it now than anything else. So it's probably fair to share some of these details so that we can make some sort of confident decisions, because there is a lot of fear. We aren't engineers, but there's huge amounts of data and studies worldwide being done on this, and there's no correlation between being near a telephone tower and any cancer emission. And I know some people will be upset with that, but that really is the fact. And I think that the proposed tower is just going to enhance the local connectivity, support emergency services, improve digital access for residents. And we all know that going up that highway, you lose reception around Leslie Vale. You get nothing. I'm with Telstra on one phone, Optus on the other, and I get zero. So that lie from Telstra that they cover 97 point whatever percent, that's an absolute marketing lie. We all know that. So the more connectivity we can get going, the better, and I fully support it.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. I'd like to steer away from using the word lie in here, perhaps just bending the truth. Next I had Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you. Sorry, I thought it was the other way around. Can I please be reminded how many people put in a submission saying they support this?
I believe there was one.
There was one. I know that there is mixed views in regards to the health discussion, and Councillor Antoli has provided some science evidence there, but a couple of the things when I read the submissions was people's kind of stress to it having that there. And yes, you know, there's a whole lot of views and opinions and different things people research and different things that is available out in the community in regards to evidence. But for some people, having this tower there, I read in these submissions of people putting in saying they don't want that there, I can see there's a lot of stress and anxiety for them having a tower there. And I wonder, as councillors, if we were to live in that area or live by an oval, like I remember Blackmans Bay, prior to being on council, the community was really distressed about having a tower there, and council actually voted to not go ahead with that. So we do have a history of the community speaking up. And I wonder if we were to have that in our proximity, you know, what really would we say in regards to this? Everyone would have their own opinion. I'd probably personally not like it so close to me. My teenagers probably would think opposite. But that's just how life goes. So I read this and I'm not going to support the tower. I'm on the side of the people who made the submission, plus probably the many comments that were made on social media. I'm not sure if any of the residents were aware that this is on the council agenda tonight. Normally in those situations we would have a few more emails. But in regards to what the people have said, in regards to the proximity, the location on the oval, the high use of recreation on the oval, the aesthetic, their views and their own research in regards to the health effects, the stress and concern, the fact that people might not even want to live so close to this, like it is an impact to their livability. I am going to vote against this, and I hope that councillors really, I guess, have another think about the submissions that have been put forward. It is a bit of a revenue to council on the scheme of things. It's really quite low, so I don't think we should put that as a significant weight. But I think we should, you know, listen to what the community has said here. And for me, there is a loud cry and a big no.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Just in answer to your question about whether local residents were aware that it was on tonight, I just had a look and it was posted on the 28th of January on the Leslie Vale Community Group page that it was going to be at the meeting tonight, and people were encouraged to attend. So they certainly have put it out there. And next on my list, I had Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Just a couple of little thoughts or questions from me. 6.3 has talked about previous approvals for similar facilities, so I just wanted to get a quick snapshot, if possible, to give a bit of context about our community and whether similar facilities exist, how many, and that kind of thing.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the facility we have located on the roof of the Sports Centre is the only one that I'm aware of that is on council-owned land. I am aware of numerous towers throughout the municipal area that are located on private and or state land, but as to the exact number, I couldn't answer that question.
Councillor Dean.
One other, I don't know if it's really a question or maybe a comment, but when it is read that we're seeking, I guess, 10 by 10 little area with it's 40 metres high monopole, I just wonder whether to kind of maybe abate some fears, whether, I know it's not statutorily required to provide it, but some kind of imagery and indication of what the tower actually is. You hear tower, you think of, well, you think of some twin towers or whatever you think of. Whatever you have in your mind might not be a monopole that's quite narrow and might be white or might be grey, to give some indication. So I don't know whether that's something, if this ever comes up again, I'll be supporting this motion, but I just thought there are some things that obviously, as Councillor Midgley's pointed out, people have concerns about. The one thing I thought, despite the report being excellent and outlining nearly everything that I wanted to know, the one thing was just around some comments in the submissions or the people writing in, don't know what you call them at this moment, really highlighted that the use of the ground as a sporting facility. Now, Leslie Vale Oval has really transformed from a paddock to a cricket oval to now the Lions use it a lot, juniors, seniors, so it's getting a lot more use. And some of the comments were about the fact that it would limit people being able to play sport there. There is one comment in here about reduced future ability to expand the use of the oval. There are now a lot of people using it, and I guess that's a really valid concern, and I know that the author of the report is a very qualified sports person in their own right, so I was just wondering if you give an experienced kind of opinion as to whether the location of this will hinder current use or future use of the ground as a sporting facility.
I think you're looking for qualified and accomplished athlete and sports person. Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. In looking at the submissions, the Act only gives direction in relation to council must receive submissions. There's no criteria for assessment. There's no further direction provided by the Act. But we have looked at this in relation to the impact of the development specifically upon the future amenity of the oval, and if you look at the boundaries of the property on which the oval is located, it is really constrained in terms of the capacity to expand the oval. The proposed site of this tower is in a pocket that is currently undeveloped, and in assessing the future potential of where that tower is proposed to go, we cannot see from a staff professional perspective any way in which the oval could expand into that area. So in that regard, the notion that this tower will limit future expansion of the oval is not considered to have merit. Some of the submissions did talk about not wanting to play sport on an oval near a tower. They relate to the health benefits, and I think that issue has already been discussed tonight in relation to the differing views that people have in relation to these. But once again, I note that there's 2,000 people a week play at the Kingborough Sports Centre that has one of these on its roof.
Councillor Dean.
Just a big thank you for the report and for that answer, and that I'll be supporting the motion as read.
Councillor Fox and then Councillor Bladewright.
I guess my question... we're not really meant to discuss why it's being put here, and I realise that it's a council facility and that might be a good reason, but from a geographical point of view, wouldn't it be better to put it on top of the hill, for example, on Hazel's Quarry or even at the airport just over by Sandfly, where you get a much higher tower and much better coverage? And why is it that they've chosen this particular location? Is it just because it is owned by council, or is it because it's a better location?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, difficult to answer that question without asking it of the applicant. I would surmise that there are reasons that relate to the required coverage, why they want to locate it here. It does sound logical to locate it on a higher geographical point, but I do presume that this particular location contributes to their desired outcome of increasing mobile coverage.
Councillor Gladright.
Yes, thanks. That was partially my question too. Have other sites been considered? But I guess because this isn't our project, so to speak, we're just looking at this option, correct? Yeah.
Mr. Smee.
Sorry, through you, Mayor. Yes, the applicant did indicate that as part of their assessment process, they were looking at this site and a number of privately owned sites, but we haven't been privy to what those privately owned sites are.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Gladright.
Yes, thanks for everyone's contributions. I echo lots of the contributions there. Councillor Antoli, thanks for all your scientific evidence. I'm more inclined to accept the World Health Organization, and they have concluded that there is no scientific evidence of health effects, so I'm largely in support of this motion. I do feel empathy, though, to those who have put in a submission and who are feeling worried about the health effects. I've done a little bit of research myself, and there was plenty of information out there about those health effects, so I urge people to have a bit more of a dig around at the information that's available. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. Any further comments? I'll just add a comment. Like Councillor Gladright, I understand the concerns that some people have about their proximity to a site, but I think, as Mr. Smee indicated, we do have a lot of those comments that we received in the submissions talked about not wanting to play sports adjacent to a mobile phone tower. But as Mr. Smee indicated, we've had a mobile phone tower up at the Kingsbury Sports Centre for many, many years. I know I was on council when it was put there, and I don't think that that has stopped anybody from participating in all their sporting activities up there. I do know from having previously met with representatives of Telstra that they choose sites based on the feedback that they get from the community about their lack of coverage. And there has been repeated feedback from the community in this area, from people travelling down the highway and in the vicinities, that their coverage is inadequate, that it drops out, it doesn't enable them to work efficiently from home because they don't have the bandwidth. So this is their response to those concerns, because they are trying to upgrade their facilities throughout the state with their Black Spot program. In terms of the health concerns, I appreciate those, but I think in times like this we do... There are none of us around here who are experts in this field of I don't even know what the technical term for the field would be called. Let's just leave it at health. It's something very specific, I'm sure. And so I feel like as representatives then we can only go by the expert advice by those people within organisations such as the World Health Organization and the Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency, who have said that there is no evidence of substantial health effects from low levels of generated by telecommunications facilities. So, you know, there's a lot of issues that come before us. We can't have the expertise within this room, and so we do have to rely on that sort of expert advice. So I will be supporting the motion tonight. I do note that this will be coming back to us as a development application as well, because this is only an opportunity for us to make a decision on the lease of the land. So there is a further opportunity for members of the community to make representations when we do get the development application. Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Dean. All those in favour? Against? A show of hands is required. All those in favour is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Cordova, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street, Glade, Wright and Reet. And those against? Councillor Midgley. The motion is carried. Thank you very much, everyone. That now takes us to page 13. Yes, that's correct, page 13, dispute resolution policy with a recommendation on page 14, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Hello. Moved Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Glade-Wright. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to move the dispute resolution policy. Essentially, there's been the Local Government Association has looked into this, and in 2021 the Tasmanian Government commenced a review of the Code of Conduct framework for councillors. Around this table we've heard a lot about some of the perceived inadequacies of the Code of Conduct process, and one of the concerns raised related to the lack of a lower cost alternative to resolve disputes, and so herein lies that recommendation. Essentially it's basically carbon copied essentially from the recommended dispute resolution framework, then with minor changes to make it fit this council. So the attached draft dispute resolution policy has been adapted from a model policy prepared by the Local Government Association of Tasmania. I'll briefly say that, well, maybe I'll start by asking a few questions. Is it possible to please outline for us the way in which this policy seeks equity by allowing for people with people on low incomes or income support to avail themselves of dispute resolution mechanisms?
So there is a fee associated with lodging a dispute under this policy. It's set at 25 fee units, which at the moment equates to I think $46, because it's $1.87 per fee unit. But there are provisions within the policy for people who can demonstrate financial hardship that fee be waived, and that would be at the discretion of the CEO.
That's great, thank you. So I think in general, I just wanted to make the point that when it comes to things like speeding fines in, I think it's Finland, where they means test it so that if you're earning $1 million a year, then your speeding fine is proportionally higher than if you're on basically no money a year, because it's kind of more fair that way, that if you can afford the $50 to make a code of conduct complaint today, then obviously it won't have the intended disincentive of stopping vexatious code of conduct complaints proportional to people's income. So what I'm trying to say is I think that that's one area where this policy is not entirely equitable, in the sense that it does allow for people who are on a fixed income or on income support to avail themselves of the code of conduct process. But one of the things that the Code of Conduct Review was attempting to, I think, mitigate was that people were firing off code of conduct complaints at the drop of a hat without really thinking about whether or not there were alternative mediation that could be cheaper. And when you look at the annual report for council, you do see, thankfully, actually not recently, but in years gone by, there have been quite significant costs to council of people kind of duking it out and having these battles, prolonged battles, when it came into the thousands of dollars that ratepayers were slugged for, I guess, the personal conflicts that were going on around councils. And I think Kingborough is actually quite good compared to other councils, but I just did want to raise that point that people need to be really mindful that they're actually making code of conduct complaints for a reason. But it goes the other way as well, that everybody who has a complaint should be able to voice it, and that's a matter of good policy for having a professional work environment. So I guess all of this is a long way of saying that I think that this policy, the dispute resolution policy, is indeed an improvement. I think it always just behoves all of us to try and it's a great thing in democracy that people disagree. It's actually a great thing, but it's really important to set those disagreements aside before they become personal animosities so that we can all keep doing the work of local government in an effective and efficient way. This policy will will go some way to improve the outcomes, I believe, when it comes to those code of conduct disputes. But I think before we get to that point, prevention is better than cure. And so I guess it's a timely reminder for all of us to try and be on our best behaviour and have disputes and have disagreements, because that's what democracy is all about, is teasing out the best ideas, but also try and do it in a professional way. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I do support the motion. I think it's good that we can be just as accountable as anybody. It's a shame that it doesn't exist for state and federal members of Parliament, but there you go. Can I ask whether or not the lodgement form that is shared at the back, will that be made electronically available? So if you can actually fill in your complaint and lodge it electronically with your payment. I think that makes it all nice and modern.
I hope the answer to that question is yes. It is yes.
Okay,
Mr. Smee's
fantastic.
Nodding.
And probably should means test it. If you're rich, you should probably pay $100,000 per complaint, and if you're everyone else, $47.66. Go for it. Sorry, being facetious.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I'll just add just my bit, because I've been involved at this from a local government association perspective as well, but I think this is just another opportunity for members of the community or, worst case scenario, councillors against another councillor to make a complaint, but not at that elevated level of a code of conduct hearing. Having been through one of those myself where I needed to take a code of conduct against one of our former councillors, it was not a very pleasant experience to go through in the way in which it was conducted and the cost to council. And I only did that because of the situation at the time, that there were no other options available. So this is giving, I guess, an opportunity to have a complaint lodged and to try and get a resolution via mediation, which I think would be a far better way to deal with something and significantly lower cost than having to proceed to a full and protracted code of conduct hearing where witnesses are called and you've got, you know, it's like a mini court hearing without legal representatives being present, and it's not a nice thing for anybody to be involved in. So the Local Government Association has been seeking this from the government for quite a while, and it also came out in the submissions that were received for the government's local government reforms, that this was something that the sector and a lot of individuals were very keen on having. And I do reflect on the comments that Councillor Cordova made, because I think that we are very fortunate around this table that we don't always agree on a particular issue, but I think that the majority of the time we do so respectfully, and the same can't be said, unfortunately, for some other councils. I won't name any, but I think we read about them quite regularly in the paper. And so I think this is just a reminder to all of us as elected representatives to continue to work in the way that we have, and that is that if we disagree around the table, that's fine, but then we leave it there and we still go out and we are polite to one another. And I think that that's a hallmark of being good representatives of the community and the role modelling that they would expect of us. And so I do appreciate the way that all of you are able to take part in our debates. So I am supportive of this and look forward to us implementing this policy as another opportunity for us to deal with complaints and hopefully then learn from those outcomes, importantly. Councillor Cordova, did you want to close debate? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. It takes us to the financial report for December 2024 on page 27 with a recommendation on page 30. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I reckon I've got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So the financial report we have before us is as at the 31st of December, so we're halfway through the financial year. The major change for this month is our original budget forecast of 2.935 deficit has been revised to 1.985, so essentially $950,000 being taken off the forecast deficit, which is great. Of that 950,000 reduction in the deficit, 600,000 is forecast to be recurrent savings, which will obviously have a positive impact on our 25-26 budget development. From the 950 reduction, 400,000 of the reduction was outlined in the November report and relates to additional rates revenue, statutory fees and fines, and the King Sports Centre gym membership fees. The big update this month is around the open space depreciation adjustment amount of 450,000. So would it be possible to get some additional information on what's occurred there?
Having a total blank. Mr. Jones, sorry. It's because you've been on leave and I haven't seen you for about 5 weeks.
Right. 3 years now. Sorry, I just missed the question.
So just around the open space depreciation adjustment, I guess just what's occurred there from last year to this year.
Yeah, it's to do with the timing of the budget preparation. The actual in the open space revaluation was done after we extracted a figure which we put into the budget, and so the amount we had allowed in there was more than it ended up actually costing, so that was a saving.
Okay.
Councillor Bain.
And the other major part of the report is some capital works adjustments. My reading of it is that the major changes are going to be carrying forward a couple of big projects, and apart from that just a few minor tweaks where we're saving some money in spots and reallocating that elsewhere. So happy to support the report.
Thank you very much. Councillor Richardson, I have next.
Thank you. Just looking at page 39, the variance to date is 952,166 and the forecast variance is 950,000. So with the variance to date being equal to the forecast variance, are we not expecting to have any further variance throughout the remaining part of the financial year?
Mr. Jones.
Through you, Mayor, for depreciation.
For the underlying net deficit?
Yeah. Well, we don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the year. That's our best guess at this stage. We know of no other variances.
Okay.
So Councillor Richardson.
Sorry, thank you. So by essentially what we're saying with this forecast is that all of the variances have happened and it's unlikely that any more variances are going to happen. That's where we're pitching it.
Mr. Jones.
Through you, Mayor. We're not saying that. All the variances we know about, we've adjusted for in the forecast. There may be variances that come up that we don't know about. For example, there was the very large development application fee that caused an increase in revenue. One of those could come in tomorrow that we're not aware of. So we will change the forecast as we go along for the following next 5 months or 6 months, reflecting anything that comes in that's significant.
Thanks.
Councillor Antolli and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a few questions. They're all on page 29. 4.6.2, the Adventure Bay resealing. So it's exciting to hear that's finally happening. Mr. Reeve will know that I've been banging on about that for years, and he's probably sick and tired of me bringing it up but it's exciting. But I don't recall us discussing the $105,000 budget variance in any workshop or anything like that. So it sort of was news to me that there is a need for extra funding to make it happen. Could I get a response on whether I might have missed that workshop or because it seems to have come out of the blue for me?
My recollection was it wasn't discussed in a workshop, but it's been put as part of the recommendations here tonight in noting the report that we approve that funding, but Mr. Reeve might want to add something to that.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's the point actually discussed. It was an error during the budget submission last year that there was about $30,000 that was put forward for that reseal, which was not enough, so it's missing a one in front of it, if you like, to it almost. So it's effectively going to cost a lot more to do that, which is what you'd expect as well. So it's just an error during the budget process, which we're trying to rectify now through the mid-year process.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. I didn't understand. There was a $30,000 and then they had to put a one and it's now $105,000, sorry?
Sorry. It's effectively, there was a $30,000 budget that was put against the resealing.
Yeah.
But it should have been about $130,000 as compared to a $30,000.
Gotcha.
Roughly.
Hence the 105 delta.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to stand... I'm assuming we can absorb that out of the blue change. $105,000 is not small change.
Mr. Reeve.
No, that's correct. So what we've done with this mid-year review, we've looked at it in terms of what we've got and what we think might actually be coming up as well. So we're quite happy to actually say that we'll, all these ones we put forward can be absorbed within the budget.
Okay. Well, I want to. I'm excited for the people at Adventure Bay, and I'm glad to see that that road is starting to get looked at, because it's terrible. The other question I have is around the Browns Road reconstruction stage two. That's here is 4.6.4. Obviously, the CEO understands that there's concern in the capacity of council to manage these sorts of projects on time and on budget, and we even had a question from the gallery about another project, the question today. So what assurance will the community get that this rather tricky project won't itself go down the rabbit hole of some of the previous ones?
Mr. Reeve, I'm tempted to say he'd stake his job on it, but he's only here for a few more weeks, so that's not going to be the answer. Mr. Reeve.
Through you, me, yes, I'll stake the CEO's job on that. no, look, it's a fair question, and I understand it. Obviously, there's been a couple that have obviously played out in the press lately. We're aware of that. We've taken a fair bit of time on this particular project. You're right, it's quite a tricky project. We've had quite a few discussions with DSG, and we haven't actually completed those discussions with DSG, so we've deliberately left it on hold for a period of time, and you will notice that we haven't actually forecast the exact expenditure. We've actually said, well, there's still a little bit more work to be done on that to make sure that we're comfortable that we've got the costings right, and more importantly, we have the how we're actually going to go about it right as well at the same time in terms of the methodology. So it's intended to have a little bit more further discussion on that, and make sure that we put forward the varied amount that we might need for that project to council for consideration in a future opportunity. So still a little bit more work to be done on that project.
And Mr. Stewart would like to add something.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Just to add to David Reeve's answer there, look, we're really aware of the, concern within our community about the delivery of these sort of projects and the impact that it has on, you know, the daily lives of people where road construction is impacting their ability to get from A to B. There's obviously a benefit in us being able to do roadworks and continually improving our assets and making sure that they're fit for purpose in terms of the condition, but also that they're serving the needs of our community. In this particular case, it is a bit of a tricky one, and so, you know, there's a commitment from us that as we're working through this process, that is front of mind for us about the impacts that it has on our community. We've got to balance the getting the job done, but we also need to think about, you know, the livability for people in our municipality, especially relating to, you know, in this particular case, we've got a community that really do rely on Browns Road quite significantly. So we're really cognizant of that and making sure that that is something that we're really thinking about as we're heading into the delivery of that project.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. I appreciate those responses. A small contribution, and I feel conflicted to even share it. I love the fact that we've gotten a $950,000 piece of good news in this report, but I'm conflicted in that I don't like surprises in these sorts of things, and I understand the logic shared about how the revaluation of the open space resources we have has altered this. Obviously, whatever we forecast would be the depreciation, we were wrong, but in a hopefully good way. I just creates a concern on our capacity to budget carefully, especially when we were advised to go for a substantial rate increase last year for the community. And I would be very concerned if any such request was made again, given that the budget has materially improved dramatically since we were convinced to increase rates to the community by a substantial amount. And it would not be unusual for the community to ask, what the hell was that all about? Because I know that the increase, the improvements haven't been just because of those rates increase. So I just want to voice some of my concern about the need for us to be really tight on what we're forecasting going forward. And I can see the CEO nodding in agreement. And having been a CEO myself multiple times, if I went to the board and pulled that sort of a rabbit out of my hat, I would be praised in one hand and scolded in the other for the reasons that I've shared, because boards don't like surprises like that. We've got to, because if I go to them the next year wanting money, they're going to say, oh, really? Prove it. So I'm just sharing that concern of mine based on the year that we've just spent. So hence, conflicted comment. I hope you understand what
I'm trying
to say.
I think the CEO is very keen to respond to that.
Yeah, thank you. Through you, Mayor. And it's an excellent point you raise. You know, obviously, the more specific we can be in our budgeting and more accurate, the better we can put our councillors in a decision-making position and also in our community in an informed position. I would still point out that despite us being improving the forecast for the end-of-year result, we're still looking at close to a $2 million deficit budget for this year. So it's still a significant significant way off putting the organisation back in surplus. There are often things that we're not in a position to be able to budget for at the beginning of the year, and we need to take a position of being somewhat cautious in terms of how we prepare our budgets. If I was coming to you with a forecast that was moving the other way, that would also be a pretty significant concern. So, you know, I take your point around the accuracy of our budgeting process. We seek to be as close as possible to what we'll be able to deliver at the end of a financial year, but I also point out the fact that we've still got a long way to go as an organisation when we're staring down the barrel of still potentially a close to $2 million deficit at the end of the financial year.
Thank you, and I think Mr. Jones would like to add something.
Through you, Mayor, just to add something quickly about the depreciation specifically. Whilst we did know that there was a lower impact from the revaluation of the open space, we were concerned about the amount of outstanding WIP and the effect that would have on depreciation. So we didn't feel it was appropriate to say that we had the favourable variance until now, when we've cleared up the majority of that backlog in the WIP, we can now comfortably estimate what we think depreciation will change from the capitalisation of the WIP.
Thank you. Next on my list, I had Councillor Dean.
Only just to make a couple of quick comments. In terms of Councillor Antolli's comments then, I thought that was spot on about the budgeting. Obviously, the good thing that I learnt about this report is that obviously the $1 million isn't, or almost $1 million improvement isn't going to be recurrent, but 600,000 is, so that's 600,000 for future budgets that has been saved, so that's fantastic. And also just a couple of additional things for what Councillor Baines pointed out is that it's a bit unusual, I think, and that's why it's probably one of the more interesting financial reports that I've read, is that we're also approving the additional funds, as we've already talked about, Adventure Bay Road, but also for Civic Centre Works, and we are deferring a couple of projects. So it is a very good report, and I really appreciate the acknowledgement that a couple of things we didn't get quite right. Adventure Bay resealing was a slight error, but it's great to be able to recuperate it, and it's definitely welcome news moving forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Bain, with a question, otherwise you'll be closing debate.
Yep, just with a question.
Yep.
Just around the Browns Road reconstruction stage 2 and the Sherbert Oval change rooms, am I correct in saying that the aim is to carry forward all this year's budget into next year's budget, and then for next year we're just looking at any increases to cover the difference?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So what we intend to do is keep a balanced budget in the capital. So this mid-year review actually reflects that. But what we do is we take an eye on, the potential variances that will come up in the second part of the year, if you like. So we talked about a couple of those there, and we're saying that those ones there will require some further council input into, because they will be at the ilk there, but we're taking that into account with in terms of the other changes we have in the mid-year review here. So we believe that we'll be able to comfortably deal with those.
Okay. Anything further, Councillor Bain?
No, thanks.
Any further contributions, Councillor Dean?
Yes, sorry, I didn't 100% I appreciated the question, I just didn't fully understand the response. So I heard then that we intend to balance the capital works budget, but we've got two significant allocations, one for Sherbert Oval and obviously a very big one for Browns Road, which I assume we're talking maybe close to two for both of those combined. We're balanced, but in 4.7 the underspend's only at 545, so we have managed to find, we have spent an additional million somewhere else within this year's budget. Is that what I hear by balance?
Mr. Reeve.
So there's lots of overs and unders that sit within, because it's a large capital program, as you appreciate, so there's lots of overs and unders. So I guess what I'm talking about balancing at year end, what you want to do is make sure that your expenditure, which includes your carry forwards as well, is balanced to what you've got for your budget. So you have to make some adjustments as you go through. So, for example, for Browns Road there, we would expect there's going to be, additional money that's going to be required to actually complete that project. At this stage there, we haven't actually worked out exactly what that's going to be there, but we've got an estimate of what that's likely to be, if you like. So we need to take that into account when we're looking at some of these other budgets as well. For Sherbert Oval, what we'd be likely to do there is actually say, yes, we need to do some of that design and investigation there, which will then highlight exactly how much money we might need to actually do that, and that'll be rebid for next year. So it's about, putting in there what we actually know, and also having an eye on what we might actually know that might be coming up before the end of the financial year as well that might need to be balanced up against. That's the main criteria, is that we get a balanced budget at the end of the year.
Your face says I didn't understand that question, the answer, Councillor Dean.
I'm just going to rely, it's my stupidity, nothing else, so I'll just leave it. Thank you.
I wasn't inferring that, but feel free, if you've got no further questions, you can always take it offline with Mr. Reeve directly. Are there any further questions? Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up? No, I'll put the recommendation then, moved by Councillor Bain and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 88 in the appendices, with a recommendation on the same page. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Mover in Councillor Midgley and seconder in Councillor Gladright. Any questions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I note the appendix items and the interesting read. Sorry, I'm just getting back to the heading of that one. Read the progress update for the implementation of the Kingborough Environmental Fund. Just before I ask a question, just noting that it is an interesting read. There's a couple of changes in regards to the staffing days to implement this fund, but it does provide a really great background in regards to where the fund and how it's being utilised. I just had a question in regards to the, say, on page 95, because I have to ask a question, so I found a question to also celebrate the great work of this. Say, when it states the coastal scrub revegetation project on Bruny Island, noting the 1,100 plant species that will be planted in that area, who is that? Like planted by the community, or who does that work?
Can you give that page number again? Because it doesn't come up on mine as page 95.
Oh, 101, maybe, yep.
101. Sorry. Ms. Shakuti, are you able to assist with that?
Through you, Mayor, I'm not actually sure, and I'll have to take that on notice.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will, thanks to all those people who are planting.
significant species, and it's a great rehabilitation. Yeah, it's just a really fantastic outcome for the utilisation of these funds.
Thank you very much. Any further questions and any of the appendices? If not, I will put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Glaidwright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Confirmation of... Oh, sorry, beg your pardon. Notices of motion. There were no notices of motion submitted. And it takes us to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority moved into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, parks, recreation and natural areas. No, we've done that one, sorry. So it's just confirmation minutes, applications for leave of absence and current court matters. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley, seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. So that brings us to the end of the open session of Council. Thank you to those members of the community who have been with us this evening, and also for those who are listening along at home. In accordance with Kingborough Council's meeting audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So open session of Council adjourned at 6:50 p.m.